You know how I know you're gay?
How? How do you know I'm gay?
Because you macrame'd yourself a pair of jean shorts.
You know how I know you're gay? You just told me you're not sleeping with women anymore.
You know how I know that you're gay?
How? Because you're gay and you can tell who other gay people are?
You know how I know you're gay?
How?
You like Coldplay. Oh, you're dead. You're dead. Oh!
Oh! Oh! Leave my torso alone at least.
You know how I know that you're gay?
How?
You like the movie Made in Manhattan?
You know I know you're gay?
How?
I saw you make a spinach dip in a loaf of sourdough bread once.
You know how I know that you're gay?
How?
You have a rainbow bumper sticker on your car that says, I love it when balls are in my face.
That's gay?
Well, we survived another four DVDs this week, which we're going to bring you here on this episode of the DVD Marquee. This is Shane McDonald, and joining me is...
Jeff Reynolds. Hey, folks.
We sat down and we've looked at four DVDs. We're going to have a little romance, a little bit of adventure, and a spelling lesson in the show. I hope you guys are ready, because I don't even know how to spell or say three quarters of the words.
I'll tell you what, right now, I'm going to put it out to our listeners. Think about this one. Xanthosis. We'll tell you how it's spelled later on, but see if you're right.
Anyway, we've got two titles from Fox, both brand new special editions. Let's talk Romancing the Stone.
Okay, let's talk.
What did you think of Romancing the Stone? I haven't seen this movie in probably 10, 15 years.
See, and I had never seen it before you handed me the special edition disc. And you know what? I really wasn't all that impressed. Actually, there's quite a bit about it that actually irked me.
Irked you?
It irked me.
It's the 80s.
I know.
You got to cut the 80s some slack.
No way, man.
It had the 80s hair, the bad 80s dialogue, the bad 80s synthesized music.
I know, but it wasn't just that. It was, well, first of all, Michael Douglas. Now, I know a lot of people think, wow, this is the movie that made him. I don't know why.
It did.
He completely, to me, it felt like he was entirely out of place in the film.
He did seem that way, but I don't know.
Despite all of the ravings about the chemistry between him, Kathleen Turner, and Danny DeVito, really, only for me, Danny DeVito and Kathleen Turner were really the sparkling gems in the performances there.
See, Kathleen Turner irked me. I could not stand her voice.
That's my copyrighted term.
I'm gonna steal irked.
Okay.
Yeah, done. Now it's mine.
I can't fight you. You're my boss, right?
Yeah. It annoyed me. Her voice just annoyed me. It seemed so wrong for this type of movie. Her voice was perfect for Jessica Rabbit, like that deep, sexy voice. But it didn't fit for this movie, and I found myself tuning out frequently whenever she talked.
See, I disagree with you there. Because of the type of character she was playing, that homebody, hopeless romantic, writing novels and stuff, I found it kind of gave a homeliness to her that really kept her within the four walls of her apartment writing until she was able to break out and experience what was going on around her.
Yeah, I just didn't feel it. I didn't feel it. And I did feel that Michael Douglas was kind of out of place, but I did like him in this movie. He was a lot of fun.
He had a couple of moments. For example, one of my two favorite lines of dialogue from the film is actually when he's leaning over the campfire and he pulls back.
Yeah, that's what I call a campfire.
That was pretty good. I have to agree. Probably one of the best characters in this movie is the village drug lord.
Okay, Joan Wilder, write us out of this one.
Joan Wilder? Joan Wilder? The Joan Wilder?
Mr. El Guapo himself.
Yeah.
Was a plethora.
Yeah, he was the best character in that movie for me.
Actually, I enjoyed Danny DeVito the most.
I enjoyed him, but it's the same Danny DeVito you see in almost every movie.
Yeah, but this was the first one, you see?
Yeah, but still, you gotta think, how long has it been since I've seen it, and how many other DeVito films have I seen since?
That's true. Yeah. But since we're on the topic of DeVito, because I kind of brought it there myself, my other favorite line from the film is when he says, actually, they're in a big cave, right? And there's Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner. You know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going, exactly where you're going.
He's pointing at me, folks. He's pointing at me. That's how exciting this is. Danny DeVito looks to them and he says,
put the goods in the bag. Now move it before Batman comes home.
And then later on, he goes into Burton's Batman franchise as the Penguin.
That, folks, is how you know we are movie fanatics. We can link a movie, one line of dialogue from about 15, 20 years ago to a movie that was done 15, 20 years later. That's insanity.
We watch way too many movies. Speaking of too many movies, this movie was directed by Robert Zemeckis. Now, he's done some great work in the past.
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, Back to the Future, he's directed all three of those.
Great movies.
In probably one of the best. But then again, all of them are all of them are one of the best, right?
Yeah.
But he's also responsible for Roger Rabbit, the look of that, and also Forrest Gump.
Life was like a box of chocolates.
And I mean, who can beat a lineup like that? I think he even had a hand in The Frighteners too, which I thought was a great flick. I love Michael J. Fox in that. So
Peter Jackson directed that one.
Yeah. One of his first big blockbusters. Yeah.
That's right.
But back on topic with regards to Romancing the Stone, I guess one of the major criticisms I have against it is that it was released only 3 years after Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is probably going to be considered one of the pivotal adventure action kind of with a hint of comedy films for years and years and years to come. And that really kind of set the bar for me, I guess, because I hadn't seen this before. So I had seen all the Indiana Jones films, and I really liked those.
That makes a huge difference, I think, in your perspective. But I'd seen this movie probably close to when it first came out on video and then revisited it just now. So, you know, having seen it before, it probably didn't weigh on me in my mind as much as it did on you. But I was thinking the same thing, especially with the vine swing and everything.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we still both kind of have the same opinion about the movie.
About certain aspects,
Even though we'd seen them in reverse, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, for special edition, it wasn't all that special.
I agree. When I saw special edition, I was thinking digitally remastered video, digitally remastered audio, all that kind of jazz. The video, you know what? I give it kudos. It looked good. It almost looked as good as Charlize Theron in some Lacey thing.
Eon Flux.
Yeah. It almost looked as good as something like that. But the audio, what was up with that?
I don't know.
It was totally a 2.0.
Yeah.
2.0 Dolby track for a special edition release.
Yeah, it definitely was not right at all. And the extras.
The extras were all right. The one thing I was able to respect after watching all of the material on this DVD was finding out what they had to go through to get this made. A lot of physicality for the actors, a lot of setbacks, a lot of really big obstacles to overcome. So I was able to appreciate the effort they put forth, but not the product.
It was nice to see them go back and revisit it, though, either this year or last year when they sat down in front of the camera to talk about the whole thing.
Yeah, the modern interviews.
Yeah. It was great for them to go back, but it was kind of light. I found it very light.
Yeah, but then again, when you think about it, you know, how...
So was the whole DVD.
Yeah. And also, how excited can you get thinking back 20 years? For the movie that brought the... And yes, I came up with this myself. For the movie that brought the Romax Shamedy to the screen, it really didn't get what it deserved.
Agreed. And then we can jump to the sequel, Jewel of the Nile. Now, Jewel of the Nile had a cool concept.
This is where I actually go back now and kind of change my opinion of the first movie, because if the first movie, Romancing the Stone, hadn't been made, then this precious piece of film would not have been made.
See, I'm the complete opposite. Really? I preferred the first one over the second one. I found myself not even watching it.
See, the reason I liked it was because of the fact that they did do something different. You know, the title was Jewel of the Nile, but the jewel wasn't a jewel. And the chemistry between the three...
Yeah, on a record for everybody.
What, are you afraid that I ruined the fact that the jewel isn't a jewel? People have seen this.
What if they haven't?
It's been around.
You hadn't seen it?
Well, I hadn't seen it.
But see, you didn't know until you'd seen it, right?
Okay, how many people from my generation?
You've just wrecked it for 6 people on the planet.
And are those 6 people really going to be listening to us?
Probably not. But what if they tune in? What if they tune in?
Well, I'll tell you what. If you're one of my generation, in mid-20s, you haven't seen the film, you're going to visit it, and you think I ruined that little tidbit of information for you, drop a message. Let me know, and I'll apologize to you personally.
It was pretty obvious from the get-go, though, that it wasn't, in fact, an actual material item. It was a person.
Exactly. But another thing that really worked for me is the chemistry between the three.
The chemistry was much tighter this time around.
Extremely, extremely improved upon. Michael Douglas fit in like a glove.
Yeah, this was more of his type. Not the actioneer, but kind of the reluctant hero.
Yeah.
I was kind of shocked when watching this movie in the credits when the name Jean DeBont came up for cinematographer.
Oh, yeah. Jan DeBont.
Is it Jan?
It's Jan DeBont. I think he's Polish or something. So.
Whatever.
But yeah, another big name in cinema history.
Yeah, director of Speed.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of other movies that are escaping me at the moment.
Yeah, it's pretty late right now, so.
Yeah. Note to everybody out there, we will not record shows this late again. The mind is gone.
Yeah. But, yeah, again, just to show what talent has been brought forth from these particular titles, Jan DeBont is among the list. Yeah.
Definitely a top-notch cinematographer. He's done a lot more cinematography lately than directing.
Another name I'd like to mention, it's kind of funny, it's almost like it's an award ceremony and I'd like to put in a nomination, but Avner Eisenberg, the gentleman who played the Jewel.
The clown.
Yeah, he wasn't an actor. He had never really acted before, but
he was a street performer. He was a street clown.
For the most part, yeah. They describe him as a clown, acrobat, mime. And he did a really good job at playing the down elements of comedy.
Yeah, he was pretty funny.
He was funny.
Yeah, he was definitely the comedic...
Well, him and Danny DeVito.
And DeVito, yeah. Especially near the end where DeVito had probably one of the best comedic moments in the film.
Well, yeah, he's surrounded by Arabs.
Yeah.
Is that the one we're talking about?
No, that's kind of in the middle of the movie, or even early on, but that was a pretty good moment too. But yeah. I was thinking when he inadvertently knocks the ladder over the pit.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, okay, now I'm thinking.
But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about when he spouts out that...
One of three great lines in this film, and they're all his. Actually, you know, might as well just mention them now, or play them now.
Ha! Your ass is brass, and I'm a lawnmower, Colton!
What is the worst that can happen to you?
I could wind up a chicken McNugget.
Woo! Woo! Hot coals! Hot coals!
Look at these guys, Colton. No sheep is safe tonight.
Now, like the first disc, pretty much the same audio video.
Yeah, the audio was a little improved, but again, the video was as crisp as the first one. Really impressed with that, even though it isn't, at least not advertised on the case, a digital...
Newly remastered, yeah.
There, that's the word I was looking for. Yeah.
I agree. The extras, same sort of flair, except for this one has a commentary.
It has a commentary with Lewis Teague, the director. Not very interesting. Lots of extended pauses during his commentary.
Maybe that's why I don't remember it. I must have fallen asleep.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, when there is those extended pauses, I noticed that they didn't bring up the volume of the movie track, so you're just kind of watching it in silence. It was kind of aggravating.
Yeah.
Another thing that was kind of interesting, but not, was the deleted scenes. Because I found that most of the deleted scenes from this film actually just turned out to be master shots of scenes without the coverage inserted on the characters' faces, which to my knowledge is not really deleted scenes since it is the same material, but just a different viewpoint. So I don't know how they justified it as deleted scenes. And again, I'm getting a little picky, but hey, we're critics here, right?
Well, we think we are anyway. There's two featurettes on this disc as well. And it's more of a pat myself on the back featurette. That's what I found.
Yeah, overcoming the obstacles once again in a totally different environment.
Now, they did have a pretty big obstacle 2 weeks out from filming. They lost some major members of the crew in a plane crash.
Yeah, yeah. Michael Douglas mentions that.
Yeah.
It's a very brief mention.
Very brief mention. And
kind of ambiguous, too, as to whether he was involved in the crash or
not.
Yeah,
he says, we survived a plane crash and I lost some members of my crew, but he doesn't say if he was in it or not. Yeah. But, you know, that for any film, that normally would set it back quite a ways, but...
But they went ahead?
Yeah, they were shooting in Morocco, and I don't think they had a lot of time to do anything. And one thing I did find interesting, though, was the F-16 model they built.
I wish they would have focused a bit more on the international incident that created...
Yeah, that would have been a good, the F-16 international crisis. Yeah,
for those of you who won't watch the special features, basically what happened is they couldn't bring in a real F-16, obviously because of some tension politically going on in the country.
And so, they couldn't get plans to build a replica either.
Exactly. Yeah, the U.S. forces wouldn't give it to them.
So they bought a toy plane, a miniature replica.
A model,
yeah.
And they used those directions and those schematics to create a full-size F-16. Now, when Italy satellite picked up this plane, even though it wasn't a real plane, apparently there was some political drop.
Yeah, that was pretty humorous to hear, and I wish they would have focused a little bit more on it. Maybe some of the media coverage and everything, that would have been great. But overall, I think this disc was a little bit better than Romancing the Stone, but not much.
See, I liked it a lot better, not for the special features, not for the audio, but just for entertainment value. This disc definitely was better.
Yeah, I preferred the first movie personally. I thought this one was a little hokey with the whole band of clowns. They're supposed to be marauders, and they kind of come... Well, they are clowns. You know, it adds some humor to the film, but it just didn't interest me the way I was expecting it to.
Well, we'll agree to disagree then.
Yes. Until next time.
Poseidon was the god of the sea. What better way to celebrate the birth of a new year than born on the back of the old fellow himself?
The clip you heard there was from Warner's remake of the Poseidon Adventure. They just called it Poseidon. Jeff hadn't seen the Poseidon Adventure, and I covered it along with Jeffrey in an earlier podcast, and that was my first viewing of it. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your feelings on the Poseidon Adventure, the original movie with Gene Hackman?
Well, I actually really enjoyed the Poseidon Adventure. You know, and there's not a lot of films from, you know, 78 on backwards, well, basically before I was born, that really captivate me. But as far as I don't know if you really call it an adventure, a disaster film. As far as a disaster film, I didn't think they made good disaster movies back then. But then again, I had never seen them. I was working on an assumption.
Yeah, that was one of the first.
Yeah, I was...
Disaster films. The other one's The Towering Inferno.
Which I'm going to see now because of the Poseidon Adventure.
And I actually enjoyed The Towering Inferno more than the Poseidon Adventure.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to it.
What did you think of Poseidon?
Poseidon was good. Wasn't great. I was going to say it wasn't Titanic, but then I'm like, wait a minute. Was Titanic really that good? It was good. I'm kind of on the fence with it.
Yeah, I think this movie went wrong for me personally. Like, Wolfgang Peterson, great director.
Yes.
He's done some really perfect Storm.
Big scope films.
Big scope films. You know, some of them haven't done as well as they could have, and that might be studio pressure or whatever. But I think where they went wrong is they didn't give us enough introduction to the characters.
I was going to go there. Yeah. Yes. Basically, you're given about maybe, if you're lucky, 15 minutes. Of which about 5 minutes of it is all of them celebrating New Year's. That's all you're given to really be introduced to the characters. You don't really care as much for them until three quarters of the way through the disaster.
By then you're already like, well, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Although there were some surprise casualties for me.
Oh, really?
There was a few that I didn't expect. You know, there's the obvious ones that I knew were going to go. I'm trying not to wreck it for anybody, but there's one girl in the film that I didn't expect to go.
I think I pretty much called them all, just in the wrong order.
But Josh Lucas is pretty good in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
I think he's coming along as an actor. It's a lot better than Stealth.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, I haven't seen Stealth, but I did see Around the Bend with Christopher Walken.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Actually, it's a really, really good, touching film, and they have some really good moments where you really get a feel for the relationship they've developed, and he's really getting a good relationship with the camera. There's a lot of moments in this film where he really stands out as a possible leading man for future big budget projects.
Yeah, he's done some good stuff. He did a rom-com, Sweet Home Alabama, where he was the lead guy.
Probably the one moment in the film that really really caught me off guard involved him coming up with a solution to create a bridge across a big, vast space. And that's all I'm going to say, because at the moment, I don't want it to be ruined.
Yeah, it's hard not to wreck this movie because most of the movie is wreckable. But one thing I got, the scope of this movie was huge.
Unbelievable. They built all the sets. They didn't rely on digital except for the one opening shot.
The opening shot was
which was incredible.
Yeah, all
two
digital.
2.5 minutes.
Where Josh Lucas's character is running.
On the deck.
On the deck of the ship. It's all digital, and I would have never guessed it.
Me neither. I wasn't until the special features I said, that couldn't have been digital.
Yeah.
I was actually thinking during the shot, I was like, how the hell did they get that camera move?
Exactly. I never even clued in myself, but they were mentioning how they would tear down one set and then they would start construction on that set the same day.
Yeah.
For the next set.
Yeah.
And probably the best set in the entire thing was the upside down lobby.
With the elevators and stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's where that moment I was talking about.
Now, I've been on a cruise ship a few years ago. I went on a cruise ship. Not quite as big as this one here, but when we were down in that main lobby and you're looking up, it's massive.
See, I'm going to get to look forward to that because I got a trip coming up on a cruise ship.
That big wall of water too. ILM.
The whole turnover of the ship, actually, I thought was incredible. It was incredibly done.
ILM did one heck of a job with the special effects in this movie.
For people who follow special effects technology, you probably have heard a lot about how difficult it is to create real water. And they go to tell you in this, they show you several stages of the production of that wall coming towards the ship.
Yeah, I think they mentioned 16 steps.
There's like 16 layers.
Yeah,
16 or 17 layers.
That's like phenomenal.
Incredible. Just saying, one person working on a layer.
To get there.
That's 16 people for what? Like probably 3 months to get
a 40 second shot.
Yeah.
If that.
And the sound during that was incredible and really
that's
impressive.
One thing we're going to talk about is the audio and video on phenomenal.
I didn't see anything.
Pretty much the best you can get for a standard edition DVD. Having viewed HD DVD, it's hard for me to honestly give this a 10 now because there's such a huge difference between the quality, but this is probably, had I never seen it, I would probably give it a 10.
Yeah, the only thing I had a beef with on the audio, there's one scene in the ballasts, and I found that there was a lot of sound, and the dialogue underscoring the sound actually had distortion. I played it back, and it sounded like there was some crackling in the dialogue, unfortunately, but it's not at a pivotal moment. It's not pivotal dialogue.
Yeah, see, I didn't notice that as much.
I did.
Different systems, though, right?
Yeah.
Different systems, different speakers, different. But there's only one extra. We only got the single disc edition, which is unfortunate.
Before we go into that,
okay,
there was one other thing I wanted to mention. And this is actually really my only negative note other than that small audio blip, was the end. And I don't know how much detail I can go into.
Don't go into it. Don't wreck it. Let's just say the ending of the Poseidon adventure was 100 times better.
Yes, there you go. That's a perfect way of doing it. And it was actually more real, too.
Yeah, it was more realistic.
Yeah.
I know they were going for the big action ending, but I don't think you needed to have that big ending in this movie. And I know Wolfgang said in the one and only extra on this DVD that they weren't trying to reshoot the Poseidon Adventure. Mm-hmm. He was just trying to make his own movie called Poseidon.
Yeah, his own disaster film.
But it's a 30-minute making of, and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, especially there were three elements that really interested me in this this documentary. And one of them was the sets, like we were talking about. Huge, huge sets.
Yeah.
The other was the stunt work. You know, the actors all did their own stunt work. Even Josh Lucas took steps to make sure that he did one particular stunt, which...
It's an underwater scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's underwater for quite some time.
It's crazy. And then, of course, the ballroom blow. That's what I call it.
Yeah. The ballroom.
The ballroom blow.
The ballroom. I was asked by my co-watcher, who is my wife. Usually when I watch all these movies, she sits down and watches with... She's like, why wouldn't you stay in the ballroom? They could seal it. And I'm like, you'll see. Having seen the original, you know, you knew it was coming.
Yeah. What amount of work.
How many gallons of water did they say?
100,000 gallons of water rushing in through like six...
Six windows.
Six windows.
Yeah, six windows. That's crazy. Imagine standing in front of that.
I wanted to.
They were up on a balcony, too, watching this, and they were scared.
Yeah, they were scared on the balcony.
Yeah.
They thought the water would knock down the scaffolding.
It was pretty crazy. It was well done. They did a lot of amazing work on this movie. It's too bad that it's kind of one of those movies that sits on the fence.
Mm-hmm.
just kind of teeter totter. I liked it for the action. I liked it for the special effects. The acting was pretty good, but I think the story kind of dropped the ball a little bit.
And, without a doubt.
And the fact that we didn't really get to know the characters. Like in the Poseidon Adventure, it's what, 45 minutes with the characters? Half an hour or so?
It's about half an hour.
Half an hour you get with the characters, and you probably get 4 to 5 minutes with each of them, and you get to know them a little bit.
And so the characters are a lot more interesting, too.
That's true.
I have to add.
But that could be because we got to know them more.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm going to recommend it.
I'll recommend it. I'm not going to say that you're going to love it.
I'm not going to say purchase. I'm going to recommend it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say purchase either.
So don't yell at us if you don't like it.
It's a popcorn movie.
Maculature, M-A-C-U-L-A-T-U-R-E, origins Latin. 1990, Fibrin, F-I-B-R-A-N-N-E, French. 1996, Vivisepulture, V-I-V-I-S-E-P-U-L-T-U-R-E, Latin. I learned all the winning words since 1925, just like you said I should.
All right, Shane, let's do a 180 here. Let's go from a disaster film to an inspiration film.
Let's do it.
Aquila and the bee.
Now, we should make a little clarification here. We did mention in the promo for this show that we were going to look at the one from Maple Pictures. Now, Maple Pictures distributes Lionsgate in Canada. So in the U.S., if you're listening to the show, it will be from Lionsgate. So what'd you think, Jeff?
You know what? I saw the preview for it, and I thought, you know what? You know, they did a good job putting this trailer together. You know, I think I might want to see it. I didn't know how much I should have wanted to see it. This movie is absolutely incredible. Along the lines of Rudy.
That was my exact thought. Yeah. This is an inspirational film like Rudy, although it's not based on a true story.
And it's not sports, so it's not as testosterone rooting kind of.
But it keeps your interest for the whole movie. There's not one moment where you're drawn away to something else.
I agree. It is quite well put together. Everything from the writing, directing, the acting, all the elements are well balanced and in place to put together just, to be honest, a phenomenal film.
The writer and director of this film, Doug Acheson, 10 years to get this movie put together. And that's basically, he started with a thought and it just kind of burned in him. And
slowly,
he just kept thinking about it. And then he started putting himself
at one point, he mentions in one of the extra features that he was sitting with a friend and they had come across the spelling bee on ESPN or something. And he's like, you know, wow, you know, there's a movie here. And his friend's like, why are you so afraid? You've been talking about this for years. Do it. So he finally sat down and started the journey.
Yeah, he penned the script and look at what he ended up with. A great film for Starbucks Entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. That's another thing that caught me off guard was that Starbucks logo. I didn't realize that they were getting this kind of product out of their ventures.
Yeah, I believe this is their second movie. Mm-hmm. And if I'm wrong, you can post a comment. Let me know. I'm not afraid to admit I'm wrong. I don't know everything, although I like to, you know, try to.
If you can't tell, we're desperate for people to comment.
That's really the fact. We're screwing up on purpose. We do know everything.
Yeah, but I didn't find anything wrong with this.
No, me either.
Well, if we get into the acting, then...
Okay, well, let's talk acting.
Let's talk acting.
Let's talk Lawrence Fishburne.
Lawrence Fishburne. All right, let me start off here. I'm going to paraphrase a line from another movie. You think those are words you were spelling? Totally Morpheus. Well, not for the whole thing, but he was Morpheus through most of it.
See, I completely disagree. I didn't even connect the two characters.
You're seriously telling me that when he was teaching Aquila, you didn't think that he was on the verge of saying,
he is the one.
I've seen quite a few films with Lawrence Fishburne in it, going back to Boys in the Hood, and this is more like his Boys in the Hood character than Morpheus.
Yeah, well, I still saw a lot of Morpheus, except for those moments where he was dealing with his past. They were few and far between, but they were significant enough to stand out, to kind of distinguish the Morpheus character away from...
I didn't see it, though.
I still saw Morpheus.
We can fight about this all night.
Hey!
And you're still wrong.
Hey, why don't people watch the movie and post a comment? Let us know if you think he's Morpheus.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea, Jeff. And then we've got Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett, her usual strong performance.
turns in a great performance.
Yeah, especially when she's, I guess you could say chastising. No, I wouldn't say chastising. When she's trying to teach Akilah a lesson towards the end, and she really comes across as a really wise mother in the end, whereas in the earlier portions of the film, she doesn't really come across that way. She comes across closed-minded and whatnot.
Yeah, she comes across as that stereotypical mom that doesn't want to do anything except for put a roof over their head and doesn't care what's happening in their lives. And in about the middle of the movie, or maybe a little bit, the last
three quarters.
Yeah.
Three quarters
of the way through, she does a complete 180, and her focus is less on work and more on Akilah, who's played by Kiki Palmer, who's incredible.
Incredibly talented young actress. In fact, she has been nominated for a number of awards for her work with William H. Macy in The WoCap, as well as winning a...
At the Show West convention, she got Rising Star of the Year.
That's the one.
Yeah, and she was nominated at the Screen Actors Guild Awards for that role, and the Image Awards and the Young Artist Awards. And so
she got all kinds of recognition. Yeah. And this movie definitely shows why.
Yeah, she's definitely a great young actress, and I hope to see a lot more of her.
Yeah.
Now, what some of you may not be aware of is she's also a singer and songwriter.
Which comes, they have her music video for the movie in the extra features. And I thought it was a catchy tune. What did you think?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, like I said, catchy tune. But back to performances. Curtis Armstrong plays the principal of the middle school. I'm sure you recognized him.
I did recognize him, but I don't know from where.
Really?
Really. It's been driving me nuts. Come on.
Revenge of the Nerds. Booger.
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 Oh, man.
How could you not remember Booger?
It's been driving me crazy. Since I watched this movie, I'm like, where do I know him from? Where do I know him from? Where do I know him from?
Yeah, he turned in a great performance.
Booger was good in this movie.
Yeah. He wasn't, you see his face and you expect something completely different, which was nice to see.
Yeah.
He actually may have his...
He wasn't funny, but he was solid.
That's a good way of putting it. No runny booger here.
Yeah, no runny booger here. No, he did. He turned in a very serious, well-acted performance.
And it's always nice to see a heavy comic turn serious, like Jim Carrey.
Like Jim Carrey,
of course, these are in two completely different ball fields. But another worthy performance to mention is J.R. Villarreal. The young gentleman who played Javier. He's been in a couple of small roles before. Very, very energetic, enthusiastic, charismatic screen person.
Yeah, he was fun.
He was a lot of fun
to watch, yeah. He's kind of goofy like I am. I could...
Yeah, but he's a lot cuter. Sorry, Shane.
That and he can spell. For those who've actually read my written reviews, you might know what I'm talking about.
And last but not least is, for me anyway, is Tsi Ma. He's the gentleman who played Dylan's father, one of the competitors.
The Asian competitor, yes.
Yeah. Very, very strong Eastern philosophy kind of performance. He really brings the Eastern philosophy of knowledge to the screen, and I was really respectful of the fact that he was able to do so strongly.
And he played a major part in this movie, even though he had a minor role.
Yeah, major part, minor role, not too much dialogue, but when he does speak, it's really, really effective to the character's, well, to his son's, anyway, character's journey.
Agreed.
Onward from performances, we have the quality.
Quality, I have no qualms.
No qualms.
No qualms.
The visual was astounding. The audio, not a lot of 5.1 use, but...
No need.
There was no need. At points, they used it when it was needed to really create the effect. There was a helicopter moment, which was kind of a memory for her, which I think they should have expanded on. Deleted scenes, we'll get to that. But overall, it's not astounding, but it's effective where it's used.
Yeah, see, I wasn't even... 2.0 would have been fine for this movie for me. I have no complaint. Although at the spelling bee...
Yeah, the crowd scenes.
Spelling bee, the crowd scenes. It's nice to have the crowd in the rear.
Yeah, it gives you a feel for what she's going through.
It's almost like you're sitting in the audience.
Yeah, or on stage.
Well, you are in the audience because you're watching it, but like you're actually there at the spelling bee. But yeah, I have no qualms about it. And there's just the right amount of extras for this movie. Just the right amount.
Just the right amount. And there was only one moment of overlap. It wasn't too long. All in all, you know, this is a hidden gem. If you didn't see it in the theater, pick it up. You won't be disappointed.
In one of the extras, I believe it was the making of Aquila and the Bee, the director mentions that a documentary that did rather well called Spellbound is really what helped them launch this movie. They were having trouble getting funding, and then after that happened, it really got them going.
Yeah, but in that same feature, did you not find it interesting? And I was thrown by this one. They made a comparison. They made a comparison between this movie and another great, you know, glory kind of flick. And that was Rocky. I was thrown by that one. I don't think it's so much of a Rocky. No. I think it's more of a dialogue-driven Karate Kid.
You, Kung Fu is strong.
Can you spell Kung Fu?
Kung Fu.
Yeah, but so I thought it was more of that kind of spirit of film. Now, one thing, while it's on my mind too, this is another one of those strange moments of correlation that I experienced in, was it Romancing the Stone with Batman and DeVito? Yeah. There's one point in the film where in one of the spelling bees, somebody has to spell, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Merovingian.
Yes. I went right back. I'm like, oh, second movie.
Lawrence Fishburne and Merovingian in the same piece of film. Yeah. Again.
That was my only relation to The Matrix in that movie.
We already talked about that.
I know, but I'm just saying that's the only point where I thought of The Matrix.
Okay.
I couldn't even spell Merovingian.
I tried. I think I got one letter wrong. Let me just wrap up first, because I mentioned in the intro, can our listeners spell Xanthosis? Shane, give it a try.
Well, I've seen the movie, so I know how it's spelt. Should I really wreck it for everybody out there?
Well, you said you in the beginning you probably couldn't do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I probably
you
couldn't. No, I don't. But I know it starts with an X. Okay. I think it goes Xanthosis.
You got it, buddy.
Yes.
You got it.
See, I can spell. I'm going to say buy this movie.
I'm going to say it's a buy, too. I was unexpectedly surprised.
Me too.
And you know what? The last little... actually, the last word she has to spell. They did a great job in putting a little montage together of all of her, I guess you could call them coaches and loved ones. It brought a tear to my eye.
It did, eh?
It brought a tear to my eye.
You wuss.
That's the second time you've called me a wuss for crying in a movie. Shane, I can't take this anymore.
We're only three shows in.
I know!
I've insulted him twice on the air. Or yeah, on the net. Whatever we want to call this.
Hey,
pod.
I'm a sentimental guy. You're going to deal with it.
It did. I got emotional. I didn't shed a tear, but...
They broke. Yeah. The wave, it crested over my eyelid.
Yeah, I was very surprised, all in all, with the power of this movie.
It was powerful.
It was powerful.
It got to the core.
Well, I think that pretty much concludes another episode of the DVD Marquee.
Yeah, and it's been quite a journey this time.
It has.
Much like the films, you know, we went from the rainforest.
Into the desert.
Underwater.
And into the heart.
Wow, there you go. How can you get any better than that, eh?
I don't think you can.
All in all, quite the journey.
It is. It's quite the journey. We had to, you know, battle the jungle, the steaming hot sun, then nearly drowned after nearly, you know, dehydrating, to find true love at the end.
We covered all the extremes.
Here is Jeffrey, letting you know what's coming up on their show next week.
Thank you, Shane. It may be Labor Day week coming up in the U.S. of A., but there's no holiday for the digitally obsessed DVD Marquee crew. On our next show, join Stan Williams and yours truly as we head back to Rydell High, courtesy of a brand new remastered collector's edition of Grease in an exclusive early review. We'll also relive the complete second season of Lost with the survivors of Oceanic Flight 815, revisit Peter Jackson's award-winning Lord of the Rings trilogy in all new packages with exclusive documentaries, and take an extensive look at a new two-disc set for the American Film Institute certified 1944 classic, Double Indemnity. On the next DVD Marquee.
So remember, you can reach us at www.thedvdmarquee.com. Vote for us on Podcast Alley. Help us climb that ladder. We moved up quite a bit this month, so thank you to everybody out there that voted for us. Let's see if we can make it a little higher in September.
Yeah, please keep telling your friends. If they like movies, they'll like us.
If you're one of our frequent listeners, then please stop by the site and visit our Frapper page and let us know where in the world you are listening from. And the DVD Marquee is brought to you by HTF Radio, sponsored by the Home Theater Forum and iCraveDVD.com. And this is us signing off with another edition.
So long.
Goodbye.
Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, and fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be?